Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk with our guest in the second part of our program, Mary Grant. She is the director for Public Water for All campaign at Food and Water Watch. And we're going to discuss Trump's infrastructure plan and what it will mean to our land, water, and future. And I'll lay out the argument that we should not again have any more public-private deals, because otherwise everything that can be sold, our roads, our water, our electric, will be. And then they can exploit us in any way they want, and they'll be able to do it legally. Also today, I will be playing some audio clips, and one is Mr. Rogers. I found an old tape where Mr. Rogers was appealing to the Senate about Nixon's plan to cut spending for public television. And if you've ever watched Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, what was the message he was conveying? What was he telling children? And why was it so popular? And how did a whole generation, actually two generations, generation and a half at least, benefit, and the children benefit? And we don't have that today. Instead, what we have is another audio clip, Millennials, the Dumbest Generation in History. We'll show you some of the proof. Not all, want to make that very clear, but the majority, yes. And then, if time permits, I'm going to have on a Professor Jonathan Haidt, and he sees a big shift in universities, in the politics of how universities are working, coming this year. He'll say what he has to say, and I'll share my opinion. Having worked in universities at Pratt Institute and College New Rochelle and City University Graduate Center and Fairleigh Dickinson University for a long time, I see something happening on campuses today that does not bode well for helping prepare students for the future, because we're not taking into account robotics, artificial intelligence, and transhumanism, three separate and distinct fields, all of which are being applied now. So if you just go into a university thinking that through the course you're going to learn, or courses and the degree you're going to get, you're prepared, then you are uninformed. I'll share that with you. So we have an awful lot to share today. I want to mention, those of you listening, you can listen over your app on your cell phone, because we have a PRN.fm app. You can also listen over any portable listening device, or your telephone for that matter. And if you're not at a computer, not at a radio, that number is 424-203-8046, 424-203-8046. We always begin with the latest on health and healing. And by the way, all the material that we select, every single show, always comes from mainstream peer-reviewed literature. So on the one hand, we're using consensus science to argue against the current standards when it comes to health. From Lund University in Sweden, a new link between gut bacteria and obesity. The university researchers have discovered a new link between the bacteria that's inside your intestines and being overweight. They found that certain amino acids in our blood can be connected to both obesity and the composition of gut microbiome. Now, we know that we have either good bacteria or bad bacteria. But what we don't always know is, what does it mean for the rest of the body? However, what they're finding is that there's negative bacteria, bad bacteria, that comes from sugar and from refined carbohydrates, pretzels, pizzas, all of your breads, muffins, and then dairy, creating all bad bacteria. That ends up causing your metabolism to be adversely affected, and that makes you susceptible to cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes. That's what the study proved. Now, there are previous studies that have shown that people with these diseases have varying occurrence of different metabolites, meaning small molecules or metabolic residue in their bloodstream. And that also is directly related to what kind of bacteria do you have? Well, what kind of bacteria you have is related to what are you eating, what are you drinking. And they found 19 different metabolites that could be linked to a person's body mass index. Glutamate and was one of them, and aromatic amino acids. But to make it simple, go with a healthy plant-based diet if you want a healthy gut and lessen your likelihood of heart disease and diabetes and obesity. From UCLA, published in Environmental Health, being raised in greener neighborhoods is beneficial for your brain development. That's correct. Primary school children who have been raised in homes surrounded by more green space tend to present with larger volumes of white and gray matter in certain areas of the brain. And those differences are in turn associated with beneficial effects of cognitive function. And that's the main conclusion from a study published in Environmental Health Perspectives and led by the Barcelona Institute for Global Health, a center supported by research like UCLA's Fielding School of Public Health. So lay language, simple. Not just children, but adults as well. Go to parks. Sit around trees. Walk barefoot in grass. These are the things that ground us. And it's very important, not just for being at ease and relaxing, but also for our brain development. Now, on an upcoming program, I'm going to talk about the brain. And one of the things they're finding in people who are what are called super agers, meaning if you look at their age, you could not identify their age by their brain. Other people, the average person, their brain shrinks. As your brain shrinks, cognition diminishes, reflex time diminishes, memory diminishes, spatial identity diminishes, your vocabulary diminishes. So everything goes downhill. And I'll explain why that happens and what we can do to reverse it. And one of the things is being out and around green areas. In fact, there's one study I'll just allude to now, I'll go in greater depth when I go into it in a very comprehensive way. But it shows that 2 hours of silence actually impacts our brain in a good way. There's a rejuvenation process when there's total silence. And we're a society that is hyperkinetic. In fact, I have an audio clip I'm going to be playing next week. One of the former president of Facebook and the former top marketing guy at Facebook. And the top marketing guy, he is from, I believe, from Bangladesh. And he says that he doesn't go to social media at all because it's addictive. It's structured to hit the dopamine receptors for reward in your brain by likes and new friends and all that. And he said it's creating a very distorted sense of social responsibility and social reality, meaning you lose yourself. There's no there there. There's just repetition of going on and downloading and downloading and downloading. And he'll, you know, and also what happens is very passive, and that also is not good for the brain. It doesn't challenge the brain. From Oregon State University, U.S. adults get failing grade in healthy lifestyle behavior. Here it is. Listen carefully. How many Americans, adults, are actually achieving the 4 basic behavioral characteristics that researchers say would constitute a healthy lifestyle and help protect us against the very diseases we talk about every day on this program, like cardiovascular disease and cancer, obesity? In the study done at Oregon State University and University of Mississippi, they examined the 4 general barometers that would help define healthy behavior: a good diet, exercise, a lower percentage of body fat, and being a non-smoker. And It's the basic health advice. In other words, that doctors often give to millions of patients all over the world, and chiropractors give it about 10 times out of a minute. And we in the United States, how many are doing it? How many are living a healthy life? 2.7%. Let me put this in context. Let me reverse it. How many people are not living a healthy life? 97.3%. Wow. Wow. So under 3% of people are living healthy? That is correct. It depends upon where you live. If you live on the Upper West Side, you could have 4 vegan restaurants, all of them good, within a 5-block area, and all of them succeeding, because you have the highest concentration of progressive, highly educated, and successful people in all fields living between 57th Street and 115th Street and Hudson River in Central Park, and that's the greatest concentration of successful people in the world, on the whole planet. So now go on the road with me, and you go to town after town, city after city, all over, and you ask, is there a vegan restaurant? Nope. Health food store? Nope. What do you all eat? Well, we eat, you know, good old American food. Almost everything fried, heavy on the meat. And then when I do a simple analysis, in fact, I do this sometimes just to get people's attention. I make a plate, and I put how much protein from an animal you would need to satisfy your requirements if you were getting your protein each day just from animals. And it's one forkful. One fork. And they think, that can't be. Well, that is. Well, why are we told we have to have 6 ounces or 8 ounces or 16 ounces? You're told by people who have been told by other people who were told by other people, and at the end of all this, there is an industry making hundreds of billions of dollars off what you eat. The truth of what you need to eat is completely different. So how many generations have we had now, about 4 generations, eating the wrong food and continuing to pass on that misinformation? And then they think, wait, isn't this normal? No, it's not. So we are a very, very, very sick nation in our health. We have the most obesity, the most cancer, the most heart disease, the most high blood pressure in the world per population. Wow. That's how successful business has been, advertising has been. And unfortunately, it takes a strong person to break free of these addictions. But I just want to give you the facts on it, so we're not healthy and we're getting sicker. So I know people in this audience tend to not smoke and be healthier. Also from Yale University, air pollutants are linked to abnormal fetal growth. And this was published in the International Journal of Epidemiology. You see, you can look out your window right now and not necessarily see any form of air pollution. It's there, you just don't see it, because a lot of this is very small. But your body responds to it, and especially all the pollutants, they get into the system and they wreak havoc. And this mixture, this toxic mixture from car fumes and industrial emissions and construction activities, and as a result, they end up going through the mother's placenta into the developing fetus, and it plays havoc with that fetal development. So, if you want to have healthier children, make sure at the very least that you have an indoor air pollution control, some kind of filtration device. Also, it's very good to have a lot of green plants, including the rubber plant and some of the ivies, hanging in baskets in your home. It'll give you more fresh air in the home. And a meta-analysis adds evidence that one of the best antidepressants is the omega-3 fatty acids. This is from the University of Amsterdam, published in Translational Psychiatry. And their findings over many studies is that the higher the omega-3 fatty acids intake, the lower the risk of major depression disorder. They looked at 13 separate studies and found that this was a randomized placebo-controlled studies, also very, very high quality. Those omega-3 fatty acids, you can get them from fish, but you can also get them from plant-based, can help you not be depressed. And finally, for those of you who have asked about fasting, our ancestors fasted, and because they couldn't be, let's say, relegated to knowing that they would have food several times a day. And the fact is that fasting was a fact of life for the hunter-gatherer societies. Well, we evolved in order to deal with fasting or food shortages. And a lot of times people overeat not realizing that there's nowhere to use that food, so it's just stored as fat. And that means that if you fast periodically, start with just one day a week, just have juices. You can have a protein shake a couple times a day, but have juices. Then you're improving your metabolism. In effect, you're giving your digestive system a chance to take a break. You're using less calories and you're burning more calories. And you're also promoting longevity because of all the studies in the world of how we can live a longer life, extend our lifespan by, let's say, 5 to 10 years. Fasting and caloric restriction are at the top of the list. Also, fasting properly, intermittent, will help improve your immune system because it reduces free radical damage and it regulates inflammatory conditions in the body and can help prevent cancer formation. And fasting also helps with inner discipline, that sense of self-enlightenment, and it helps more people stay connected to what's essential in life because they've meditation and yoga, even the martial arts done for the right reason. When you don't have the body burdened by food on that day, in effect, it's making more energy for the body. It's available. Your chi is higher. When you're fasting, your chi level vibrates at a higher level. It means that you're having plenty of liquids and you're having nutrients, but you're having your nutrients in drinks. And I do this all the time. It makes a big difference. So fasting can make an enormous difference if it's done properly. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. We're going to take a moment here and listen to a person that many of you might have heard, might have watched him, Dr. Rogers. I just thought this was kind of interesting to hear his perspective on what he felt he was able to achieve and what he was doing and why he was doing it. I'd never heard this before. You know, that you see people on television or you put your kid there and say, this is important, watch it. But it doesn't mean that you're watching it and know the motivation. Here, Mr. Rogers is testifying before Senate committee back in Nixon's era because they were going to cut public spending and cut his television show as well as others. And so he's asking him to reconsider it. Listen in, please.
Supposed to be a pretty tough guy, and this is the first time I've had goosebumps for the last 2 days. You got the floor.
Senator Pastore, this is a philosophical statement and would take about 10 minutes to read, so I'll not do that. One of the first things that a child learns in a healthy family is trust, and I trust what you have said that you will read this. It's very important to me. I care deeply about children. my first children...
Will it make you happy if you read it?
I'd just like to talk about it, if it's all right.
All right, sir.
Okay. My first children's program was on WQED 15 years ago, and its budget was $30. Now, with the help of the Sears Roebuck Foundation and National Educational Television, as well as all of the affiliated stations, each station pays to show our program. It's a unique kind of funding in educational television. With this help, now our program has a budget of $6,000. It may sound like quite a difference, but $6,000 pays for less than 2 minutes of cartoons, 2 minutes of animated, what I sometimes say, bombardment. I'm very much concerned, as I know you are, about what's being delivered to our children in this country. And I've worked in the field of child development for 6 years now, trying to understand the inner needs of children. We deal with such things as the inner drama of childhood. We don't have to bop somebody over the head to make him to make drama on the screen. We deal with such things as getting a haircut or the feelings about brothers and sisters and the kind of anger that arises in simple family situations. And we speak to it constructively.
How long a program is it?
It's a half hour every day. Most channels schedule it in the noontime as well as in the evening. WETA here has scheduled it in the late afternoon.
Could we get a copy of this so that we can see it? Maybe not today, but I'd like to see the program.
I'd like very much for you
to see it. I'd like to see the program itself, or any one of them, you see.
We made 100 programs for EEN, the Eastern Educational Network, and then when the money ran out, people in Boston and Pittsburgh and Chicago all came to the fore and said, we've got to have more of this neighborhood expression of care. And this is what I give. I give an expression of care every day to each child to help him realize that he is unique. I end the program by saying, you've made this day a special day by just your being you. There's no person in the whole world like you, and I like you just the way you are. And I feel that if we in public television can only make it clear that feelings are mentionable and manageable, we will have done a great service for mental health. I think that it's much more dramatic that two men could be working out their feelings of anger. Much more dramatic than showing something of gunfire. I'm constantly concerned about what our children are seeing. And for 15 years, I have tried in this country and Canada to present what I feel is a meaningful expression of care.
Do you narrate it?
I'm the host. Yes, and I do all the puppets, and I write all the music, and I write all the scripts.
Well, I'm supposed to be a pretty tough guy, and this is the first time I've had goosebumps for the last 2 days.
Well, I'm grateful not only for your goosebumps, but for your interest in our kind of communication. Could I tell you the words of one of the songs?
Okay, now, here is the point of this. Today, we have some serious problems, and they're multifactorial. It doesn't boil down to one simple encapsulated solution. We're looking at a nation with over 80 million young people, and we're looking at the actions of a small number of people, around 120, who have acted out in such an extreme way that we're all confused, and the first thing we want to do is go in and start blaming people and coming up with some form of law or rule that will change that. What we're not getting at are some of the following. How has parenting failed to prepare their children for the real world. But that depends upon your socioeconomic condition. It depends upon the peer pressure of that child to adapt to their friends' behaviors and their likes and dislikes. It also takes into consideration the myriad ways in which social media impacts us, including dulling our sensation of truth in relationship and what real feelings are. Almost all the feelings we have today are manufactured feelings. They're based upon someone telling us we should be angry, or we should be happy, or we should be elated, or we should be fearful, based upon what they tell us is the truth. We don't determine it. Is it really true? Look, we got into war in Iraq, invaded and destroyed a country that had nothing to do with 9/11, had nothing to do with us in any way, represented no threat, existential or otherwise, and over 1,200,000 Iraqis were killed. Over 8 million were made homeless, and the environmental impact was horrific. We did the same thing in Iraq under the Clintons, where 500,000 to 640,000 children were targeted. By the way, you may not know this, but after the sanctions that Hillary and Bill Clinton put into effect, those sanctions were to deprive Iraq of medicines and food, things that were necessary for basic life, including just chemicals to help their filtration system like chlorine. And then, according to the Freedom of Information Act, the Defense Department actually showed that they had targeted civilian water structures. And on the one hand, the ideology of the Council on Foreign Relations and those people who control everything, and they control the present, they are the deep state. They are the single most nefarious group of people on the planet. But in their bright minds, the idea was, we'll starve the people into rebellion. When enough of their children die or are sick, they'll overthrow Saddam. Well, in the interim, Saddam had water purification plants, plenty of food, his army, his National Guard, some 70,000 soldiers that were protecting him. So there was not going to be any uprising, and there wasn't. So when Madeleine Albright was asked, was it worth it to have 500,000 children die? She said, yes. Where was the outrage on the left? You're willing to sacrifice 500,000 children over a failed ideology and hold no one accountable, including the architects? What kind of human being does that? Oh, the new liberal McCarthyism, that's what it is, and we're going to call it out. I'm going to shout it out. I'm just beginning to show you the truth of what's going on and who's controlling us. So now what we have is we have an entire industry that profits off manipulating our minds and consciousness to tell us what is truth and what is not truth. But in the interim, what are they not dealing with that we need, we the people? Well, we need a universal health care. We're not getting it. We need to clean up our rivers and lakes and the ocean. We're not doing it. We need to stop global warming, slow it down, or inform the people who are in places that are vulnerable that they should be considering in a reasonable and responsible way to relocating and helping them. We're not doing it. We have 10 million square feet of empty space in New York alone for federal and state and local governments not using space. We can convert those into living spaces for people who are homeless. We're not doing it. We have over 48 million extreme poverty people in America. We're not helping them. We could. We're not. We shouldn't be putting $1.5 trillion into nuclear. We are. That money could de-ghettoize America. We should be forgiving all public education. We're not. We're making it even more difficult for students to wiggle out of their debt. They may stay at home, but their parents signed as co-signatories and hence are responsible. So now SWAT teams can arrest your parents and confiscate whatever's in their bank accounts. Nothing is being done. We have 3.2 million children going to school who have no home to go to when they get out. We don't care. So when you look at the real problems that we should be facing and dealing with in a constructive way, we're dealing with nothing. What do I mean by nothing? I mean not one single problem is anyone in America dealing with. What kind of cowards, what kind of asses have we become? The Clintons and the New York Times and the CNNs and the Fox and the conservatives, they're all guilty as hell. I'm just giving you an example how Madeleine Albright, that war hawk, and all the people on the Council on Foreign Relations, those people are the ones who make sure that every reality you think is real is not. It's propaganda, and it's just destroying us. So now, do you think your children are immune from that? Everything they watch on television, the video games about the Man of War and Call of Duty? What do you think happens when kids who are 7 years old are blowing to pieces in very graphic form, like a Sam Peckinpah Wild Bunch movie where you see slow motion, blood spurting out after a bullet hits? Do you think that desensitizes them to what might happen if they were ever confronted with a human being in a similar situation? So where have we gone? Well, we went a long way from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. We went a long way from Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and Mickey Mantle and other athletes and all different, Johnny Unitas and Bart Starr, great athletes, and Jerry West, all the great athletes in all the different sports who acted as a role model for men and women, the women athletes as well, so that as you were growing up, you said, wow, I'd like to be like that person. Because when they would go home from the Dodgers or the Yankees, they'd go back to their neighborhoods in Brooklyn. They go live in the same brownstone. They didn't commingle their career with their social and familial responsibilities. It was, I'm just a person who has some talent, and I'm being paid nicely, and my family is not going to move out of here to some giant mansion on a hill someplace. We're fine. So we were giving ethics, moral, and character. We were taught not to fear people. We didn't have the stupidity of identity politics as the number one cause of how we relate and react to people. We were just human beings trying to coexist, and we're able to, in spite of all the politics and profiteering and the political machinations that were occurring by those in power. Eisenhower warned us. We didn't pay heed to it. So now when we have a kid that acts out, A, we make the mistake of condemning as if all kids are capable of it. They are not. But what about those parents who didn't teach their children, impart in those children, the empower of ethics, cause and effect, morality, social consciousness, empathy, and societal commitment? What about those who are just spoiling their children? You don't have to do anything, Jimmy. You win. And so Jimmy one day doesn't feel he has to commit himself to any higher ideal because he's going to win the trophy if he fails. But we don't allow people to fail. We don't allow people to learn the lessons of life. We feel it's too painful for them. And we don't want them to feel bad about anything, so we cushion everything. So now when you go onto a college campus and you don't like something the professor has said or the tone he has said it or she has said it, you now write a grievance. Now there's a special investigation, and we have more administrators in college looking at the teaching to make sure that the student does not feel uncomfortable about anything that's being taught and how it's being taught or what's being taught. And so teachers are terrified today. They have to edit themselves before they say anything. Least of all, they say something that is not gender-specific and identifying in a sensitive way. You realize what this is doing, don't you? You realize that in the real world, the world that we all live in, these people are completely, totally screwed. Who's going to want to hire one? Who's going to want to befriend one? Who wants to be around spoiled, petulant, reactionary brats? Who? You? Me? No. Nope. You want to be around kids who are like the kids from past, curious, interested, challenging, motivated, and who has some sense of moral balance and has enough natural grit that they can laugh at themselves and laugh at the situation they're in instead of everything being offensive and them being considered a victim. Today we have a whole generation, they start off believing that they're a victim and then looking for something to justify it. Not a good situation, not by any means. So on some levels, understand who wouldn't be able to succeed today. Richard Pryor, Lenny Bruce, Shelley Berman, Sophie Tucker. I could name a lot of people who today wouldn't find it politically favorable for them to be themselves. That's how wound up tight we are. As if somehow the notions of absolutism on the part of a handful should supersede everything else that is fine with our lives. Wow. Have we really hit our head falling off the apple cart with that? This is a, and before we go to our guest, this is a person who is on a panel. He's a professor, Jonathan Haidt, who sees there's going to be a shift in this attitude. That's his view. I'm only going to play a couple minutes of it. I don't see that. I see it getting worse. I see more professors leaving. I see more educators and teachers saying, it ain't worth it. You know, the moment I try to do something to help a kid, suddenly the parent calls me and says, my kid deserves an A. Well, your kid didn't study. Your kid didn't do well. It doesn't matter. It's your fault. You know, I want that A, or I'm going to come down there and protest. How many of those do you have to finally get before you say, I'm out of here? You know, what's the point of going through some motions of thinking that we're actually graduating students who have a brain when there's just some empty vacuum there? They're not. And that's the majority. But there is a small 5% minority, just like I told you at the beginning. The latest study shows only 2.7% of Americans are healthy or even making an effort to be healthy. That means 97.3% are not and not trying. Now, when you're really honest about this, you'll see the truth. Here is just some millennials, average millennials, being asked simple questions. And this thing went on for an hour. I just wanted you to hear about 2.5 minutes of it, of what they don't understand about the world they live in. Please listen in.
We did.
Who won the Civil War?
I don't know.
Are you an American?
Yeah.
Okay, it was a big, big popular historical event. Hold on a second. Got to ruin it for us. Okay. Civil War.
Okay.
Who won the Civil War?
I have no idea.
Are you an American?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are. Okay. It was this big historical event that happened in America's history, and it was a big war. It started Veterans Day. Can you tell me anything about it?
Can you give me a choice?
It would be the South or the North?
The North.
You're just guessing?
Yeah.
So you're not sure?
I'm not sure.
You're not sure. Okay, we gotta go. Okay, thank you. She'll explain everything to you.
God damn, I'm gonna be on some show and I'm gonna look like a f***ing idiot.
Hey, watch your mouth.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm gonna look like a dummy. Pants.
Who won the Civil War? I don't know.
In America, the Civil War.
I'm not sure.
You're not. Are you an American?
Yes.
You are. Were you born here?
Yeah, in near L.A., yeah.
That explains a lot.
I don't know that.
Who won the Civil War?
America.
I'll just wait here and maybe it'll come up and...
I don't know that question.
What is this for?
Who won the Civil War? Come on. Pop quiz.
We're not going to do this right now.
Who won the Civil War?
The North. Which Union, technically.
Okay,
yeah. Not the Confederates, okay. Yeah.
Which political party was fighting to support slavery during the Civil War? Republicans or the
Republicans.
Democrats?
Republicans.
Actually, it was the Democrats.
How?
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln
was a Republican.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, it's contrary to popular belief. The liberal media has brainwashed so many people that have lost touch with history and reality.
Wow. I feel like I missed that in history class.
Yeah, your liberal professors probably just wanted to sweep that one under the rug.
I'll bring it down. The way that goes on for an hour and 99% of the people couldn't get it. The only three people who got the answer correct, who won the Civil War, were foreigners, people from other countries. A person from Brazil, a person from Scandinavia, I think Norway, and another one from Sweden, they knew. The Americans didn't. And it wouldn't matter what the questions were, because I listened to 10 other tapes of 10 other types of questions. They didn't know. So, but that's not considered important. History is not important. Geography is not important. Ethics is not important. Morality is not important. Dealing with life issues is not important. Not when you have a backup system that will get on the phone and call a professor or fix it for you. Wow. More on this on an upcoming program. Let's go over and say hello to Mary Grant, standing by. I gave you her bio earlier. She's director of the Public Water for All campaign at Food and Water Watch, which is a nonprofit public advocacy organization that stands up against corporations to assure healthy food and clean water and land protection for all. And she has a degree in environmental science from Duke University, and the website is fwwatch.org. Nice to have you with us today, Mary.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
President Trump recently released a $1.5 trillion infrastructure plan, which some analysts are calling on an out-of-control privatization bonanza to gouge Americans and manipulate markets for the benefit of large corporations and banks, period. Now, you've described this strategy as a giveaway of public land and water to Wall Street with the goal to privatize public services and utilities solely for private interests to make money. So beginning with water, what does Trump's infrastructure plan propose, and what's going to be the likely effect if it is implemented? And also, please explain to us how low-income towns and communities, often areas with higher minority populations, pay higher water rates even now than wealthier communities, and won't this plan even make matters worse, whereby poor families will no longer be able to afford water? The form is yours.
Thank you so much. So Trump's infrastructure plan is basically a blueprint for handing over our public land and water to Wall Street. There's a lot of provisions within his infrastructure principles that came out last week that seek to incentivize and facilitate the privatization of public assets. Part of it is he outright wants to sell off federal assets like the Washington Aqueduct, which provides water to the D.C. and Northern Virginia area. So that's an outright sale that he's calling for. And then there's other mechanisms within his plan that he wants to facilitate and incentivize, giving subsidies for his friends on Wall Street to take over essential public services. So the bulk of it is about passing the buck to states and localities to raise new revenue on their own through rate hikes and privatization. So our water bills would have to skyrocket to allow Wall Street to profit. This will lead to more unaffordable water service, which can cause some people can lose their homes over unpaid water bills. People can lose water service in their homes because of shutoffs. We've seen that on average, large private companies charge 59% more than local governments charge for water service. So privatization is not a way to resolve the affordability crisis that many communities across the country are facing. Instead, we need to have like that direct federal support through the existing state revolving fund programs. These are state-managed programs that provide relief to families by making sure that everyone has access to safe and affordable water service. So the provisions within his plan that incentivize privatization, they're pretty technical, wonky. It's about changing rules, about change of use rules for existing municipal bonds, making it so that privatization and private companies have access to subsidies that are currently available to local governments by making bonds tax exempt. There's provisions to give out billions of dollars of subsidies to private activity bonds, which are only for privatized projects. It doesn't benefit our public water systems at all. Just for background, nearly 9 out of 10 people who have water service piped to their home have it from a local government, from a publicly owned system. So privatization is pretty rare in the United States. Historically, many of our nation's water systems were privately owned, but then around the turn of the 20th century, there was this wave of movements for communities to gain local control of their water systems because there were the private companies weren't making the investments that needed to happen. There were widespread fires causing massive property destruction. There were cholera epidemics because private companies didn't want to invest in low-income communities. So Trump's infrastructure agenda might bring us back to that era of widespread fires from not having adequate infrastructure investment, you know, waterborne diseases spreading because people have mass shutoffs. We're seeing already there are people talking about diseases spreading in Detroit. It's a public system, but they have widespread water shutoffs. So not making the investments we need in our water systems, providing the funding that we need for water systems, passing the buck to localities, making them raise water rates or privatize their systems is not a solution for these problems that we're facing. His scheme will also shift how we fund infrastructure. So he has this incentives program he's calling for setting up, which would incentivize communities to invest in systems, but they have to, how they would prioritize limited federal funding would be on the basis of who can raise their own revenue through rate hikes and privatization. But, and so that's how we're going to see wealth shift from low-income communities, poor folk, working folk, to people who can't, to people who can already pay for their infrastructure. So it's the shift of federal resources, federal priorities, federal funding priorities to prioritize communities that can already raise their own revenue. And we've seen that in the Chicago area, low-income towns and communities of color already pay higher water rates than their wealthier, typically whiter neighbors in the suburbs. There was a recent Chicago Tribune series that is talking about this disparity in access to affordable water service. Similarly, there's been studies of Michigan that have shown the same thing, that low-income towns actually have higher water rates than wealthier towns. The Michigan study points to a big reason for this is that as wealthier folk leave communities that are falling into disrepair, as industry leaves cities like Detroit, where it's the deindustrialization of the city is causing industry to leave, people who have the means to leave the city have left the city to wealthier suburbs. So it leaves cities like Detroit with an infrastructure legacy that is borne by the remaining people who don't have the means to leave the city. So Trump's privatization agenda will deepen these disparities, and we know that private investors will not put money into replacing water lines in low-income communities or rural communities. They generally cherry-pick service areas, so they leapfrog around low-income communities to serve wealthier subdivisions. So it's not a solution for making sure that low-income communities have access, these rural low-income communities in particular have access to safe water. It's also not going to increase federal funding for infrastructure. There have been a couple of analyses looking at his overall infrastructure package and it's comparing it to what he's proposing in his budget. And his budget actually proposes a net cut to infrastructure funding. So even though he's proposing $200 billion in new federal funding for infrastructure, he's actually proposing to cut more within his budget than he would provide by this new infrastructure program. One of the things he proposed to cut is the rural water system grants from USDA. So rural systems, there was a recent study that came out that shows that rural small systems have the worst water quality. People in rural water systems experience chronic water quality violations and water quality problems. So these are communities that really need and rely on federal grants that he's proposing to cut, to completely eliminate the grant program. And he's also proposing to open up existing programs, existing federal funding programs to private companies and other non-water projects. He wants to open up the Clean Water State Revolving Fund program, which is the main source of federal funding for wastewater and stormwater systems across the country. He wants to open that up to big corporations, but he's not proposing increasing funding to that program. So this basically amounts to taking away funding from local governments to give to his friends on Wall Street and big corporations. So more broadly, Trump's infrastructure agenda will likely lead to cuts in services and public infrastructure investments to pay for his corporate tax giveaway. And he also is calling for a rollback of some environmental protections. One of the things he wants to have complete control over is authorizing oil and gas pipelines in national parks. So our national treasures, he wants to streamline and allow big infrastructure and pipeline projects to go through. So that's an overview.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate your overview.
No problem.
But is it not true that the plan includes fossil fuel extraction, which technically has nothing to do with our nation's infrastructure, aside from maintaining and regulating safe pipelines? So how is this fossil fuel development, such as oil drilling and fracking, fit into this plan, and are there other projects this plan supports that have no relation to the kind of infrastructure strategy we are in need of?
Yeah, so one of the things his plan calls for is called a public lands infrastructure fund. So this would be part of how he would want to raise money for his infrastructure agenda to privatize public services, would be by oil drilling in our offshore and oil and gas drilling in our public lands. So it's about oil, it's about drilling and mining in public lands and public waters. So taking that revenue and using it to incentivize privatization of public assets. He also is proposing to create a new transformative grant program, which would give federal grants to commercial projects that aren't commercially viable. So including energy projects, so new forms of energy projects that aren't currently like viable, that it's too risky to do it on their own, that he wants to include funding for that, which is interesting because of how limited these federal dollars are, that he's giving a big portion of it, I think 20%, to these transformative grants.
So he's giving companies that don't have a viable option to succeed the inability to fail. What could possibly go wrong about that? That's the dumbest thing imaginable. We should have voted for Alfred E. Newman. You realize that, don't you? But by the way, the American Society of Civil Engineers estimated $4.6 trillion is necessary to upgrade and maintain all of the nation's infrastructure. And the Society's report card gives the United States infrastructure a D, and Trump's plan is for $1.5 trillion. However, only $200 billion comes from the federal funding over the course of 10 years. Then the plan expects states and cities and private companies and investors to make up the remaining $1.3 trillion. Please name me the cities that are sitting there with available cash and the billions and hundreds of billions of dollars to pay for this. I don't know of a single city. Do you?
No.
No, cities are threatened with going bankrupt, becoming insolvent, because their pensions are funds which were negotiated at a time when we were more prosperous, are now bleeding these dry. No state is able to balance their budget outside of North Dakota. So his plans, to me, make no sense economically and just to his core base where he can say he's doing something. So on the one hand, our nation's infrastructure is in dire need to reconstruct, and compared to other developed nations, our highways, our bridges, our sewer system, our water treatment plants, our electrical grids have declined to third world status. And there have been innumerable reports on how polluted and contaminated many of our cities' water is. Flint is not the only one. There are 1,100 other countries that have polluted water. And, of course, Trump and the GOP's argument is that Washington has no responsibility for providing safe water or better roads. This should be left to the states. So now in comes the private corporations, and they'll end up giving a few bucks down and then owning that road. And right now there's a road in Washington, D.C., that just one toll on the road is $46. One single toll, $46. And that we could start looking at all across America. Your final thoughts on this, please.
I think that there is a great opportunity for people to come together to stop this plan and make sure that Congress actually passes the solution that people need, because our water infrastructure is in dire need of direct federal funding and support to make sure that people can afford their water service and also they have access to safe water service. It's so important. So I think there is possibility for people to come together to stop this agenda.
I hope they should, and I would like for them to know that your site does a lot of work. You all do a lot of good work down there at Food and Water Watch. The website is fwwatch.org. fwwatch.org. Mary Grant, thank you very much for being on today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
And I'll do more on upcoming reasons why the Trump I have five reasons why the Trump infrastructure won't work. Let me just run down real quick. Trump's scheme is a Wall Street giveaway. That's the simple part of it. And also, the plan will make water unaffordable, and Trump is attacking poor people and communities of color, and the scheme cuts federal funding of public water, and this plan would devastate the environment. And those are, you can read the whole article by going to Food and Water Watch and Mary Grant had written the article, and it's five reasons Trump infrastructure plan is bad for communities and the planet. Really get educated, and it will help you. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Just one quick announcement. Sunday night at 7 o'clock, I'll be doing a conference call for individuals who are interested in intentional communities. I'll be discussing what I see the future to be and how those, and it's probably for a small number of people who are interested in making lifestyle choices and breaking free of the grid of living on the grid and want to live a more authentic and empowered life. What you'll do, you'll go to this and simply put you want to attend, and you'll be called. We're screening people to make sure it's right for you. And that is prnstudio@gmail.com. prnstudio@gmail.com. And I'll be reading all of the citizen activists' reports over the weekend and announcing, you know, to the people, we'll call them, those who did a good job. And then we'll start putting those and posting reports up on our website. And we're also going to be adding a segment to our program, Citizen Activists, where those people can come on the air, those who want at least, and who are not shy, and articulate what their research is. I'll give you an example, just one. We had one person do research on how many lawsuits the pharmaceutical companies have lost and how much money they paid and for what causes. The number's over 300,000 lawsuits they've lost, over $100 billion. And yet, no matter how many times they're found guilty, no matter how much money they spend, no matter how many lives they sacrifice or injured people, they get out of jail free. Their charter's not challenged. Their profits are not challenged. No one is held accountable. And yet, if you or I do anything that is considered uncivil, illegal, immoral, or unethical, we are skewered and pillared for it. What hypocrisy and what double standards? That's just one of the reports that you'll be hearing about. Have a nice day, everyone.